Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Tim Johnson, CEO of Granite Creek Copper, GCX on the TSXV and GCXXF on the OTCQB. And Tim, it's great to have you on the show for an update. You guys have had a lot of news coming out recently as far as your new resource estimate at the CarMax project, and you have a lot of news on slate for this year coming up and a lot of work for 2022. But before we dive into some of that, if you could just maybe briefly share how the company came together and how the land package with CarMax and CarMax North came together into one project now, just to get listeners up to speed that may not be familiar with the project.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to be on the show. But yeah, so Granite Creek, of course, we've got our one project in central Yukon, the CarMax project. And the genesis of that was we launched in January of 2019 with acquiring from a local Yukon prospector about two-thirds of our current land position, so the northern part of our current claim block. And then in November of 2020, we acquired the CarMax deposit itself through acquisition by merger. So we merged with a company at the time was called Copper North. They had the project. And what we did, in essence, was put together a significant starter resource, and we saw an opportunity to grow that with a lot of blue sky for further discovery and development of resources. So our initial resource was just around 24 million tons, had quite a nice copper grade, had a preliminary economic assessment done in it, was authored in 2017, but that assessment only looked at a portion of the deposit. It looked at a small sulfide portion of the deposit, even though there was other resources that were well known. So this year, our last year in 2021, we launched an aggressive drill campaign to grow those resources, which culminated in us publishing an updated National Instrument 43-101 resource estimate that was released to the market just a couple days ago.
Well, absolutely. Let's get into that update, Tim, because on the 15th of March, you announced that at the CarMax Copper Gold Silver Project in the Yukon, you've increased the measured and indicated copper by over 43%. And a lot of people forget you also have precious metals at this project. You increased the gold and silver resources by 24%. So some big increases there, but walk us through a high level. What have you learned? How have things grown at the CarMax Copper Gold Silver Project based on this new resource estimate?
Yes. So not only did we increase the resources, so we're now sitting on just over 36 million tons, grading 0.81% copper, 0.31 gold, and 3.4 grams silver. And on an equivalent basis, that is just over a percent copper as an equivalent. But like I said, not only did we increase those resources, but we also pit constrained 93% of them. So previously, like I said, they had looked at one zone. They had wrapped the pit around one zone. There's actually three conceptual pits now on the project. They're fairly shallow. I think the deepest one goes down to about 300 meters. And some of the other ones are 150 meters plus or minus. What that allows us is leaves us room to continue to grow those resources as we look to a 2022 program.
Well, you've got to be excited, Tim, just all things considered, with Dr. Copper having even a further price breakout, hitting over $5 just 2 weeks ago, but still at very strong prices in the upper $4 range. Do you have any idea on what that will do to the economics, or is that more slated for the PEA that you have coming up later this year?
No, you absolutely nailed it on the head. We think that the price of copper will have a very positive effect on the economics of the project. The last PEA on the project was written in 2017 with much lower copper prices and much lower gold prices. So we expect today's prices to have a significant effect on the economics. And, of course, we expect the increased metal and the pit containment of all the resources to, again, have a very positive effect on economics. So I'm glad you brought up the PEA. Yes, we are launching an updated PEA. We will be discussing that with the market once we finalize the firm that's going to be doing that for us. But then if everything kind of comes together, we expect to be able to deliver that to the market sometime third quarter, probably mid to late third quarter of this year. And the reason we can do that so quickly is we are updating an existing PEA, and we did a lot of the engineering work that's going to be needed for that PEA in last year's in the 2021 field season. So everything is lined up and we're ready to go to deliver that study to the market.
Well, Tim, you did have a very active field season last year, so not just the work you did building towards that economic study, but you did a lot of drilling. You did come away with a kind of a key new understanding of the deposit. You know, previously this deposit was understood as an oxide deposit, which it is, but that in some of the drilling you've found sulfides not just at depth but also closer to surface, and that it may change your understanding of how everything's orientated and also how you would approach possibly a mining scenario. So why don't you walk our audience through how these sulfides, you know, play into the thesis and how that may play into this upcoming PEA?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, for years, this has been known as a small oxide play, and various companies over the years have tried to put a small oxide play into production and have tried unsuccessfully to grow the amount of oxide resources to provide the long-term mine life that I think you need, especially in a base metal project. So when we got a hold of the project, we looked at the sulfide. That was known but not really well developed, and that was the focus of our drilling from last year. And now, on the project, the contained metal in the oxide and sulfide domain is roughly equal. And that is significant because as we look at what processing we're going to start with, when you build out a mine, you're going to start with processing one type of ore, either oxide or sulfide. And then at some time during the mine life, you're going to convert your operation to process the other time. And of course, it's going to be an incremental capital that's required to do that. All of this is going to be addressed in the updated PEA. Now that we've gotten to equal sulfide and oxide, now we're starting to question and sort of try to figure out what gets processed first. Like I referenced earlier, there's three conceptual pits. The southernmost conceptual pit, the sulfide is actually quite near surface. There's very little oxide there. We understand that the capital cost of a conventional flotation circuit that you would use to process the sulfide is probably a little cheaper than the in-tank leaching for the oxide. And we've seen we're getting better recoveries from the sulfide material versus the oxide. So, but what we're doing, we're going into the PEA with our eyes wide open. We're going to let the economics tell us whether we should be processing sulfide first or oxide. And then we're going to show in that study how those two different processes affect the economics, when we're going to transition from one to the other, and we're going to target, you know, a 15 to 20 year mine life. We think we have the resources for it, but we need the economics to back that up. And that's going to be the basis of our study.
Well, it's definitely a new understanding of the deposit, and it should be key in the role it plays in the economics. So we want to keep our eyes peeled for that preliminary economic assessment when it comes out in the third quarter. I know you guys are still explorationists at heart. In addition to developing this project and de-risking it, you still have an active drill program planned for 2022, and I think you'd mentioned off mic that you really are going to focus more on discovery this year. Of course, still growing the resources, but looking at some new step outs, looking at some new targets. Walk us through the broader vision for the exploration plan in 2022.
Yeah, so you're right. There's a couple fronts that we're going to focus on. We will be targeting more sort of what we consider discovery, and that is an attempt to find a new bodies of mineralization, or to further advance areas that we have strong indication that there could be one. I mean, there's multiple targets on the property going back to the 1980s when previous operators were intercepting, you know, intercepts like 2.5% copper over 20 meters. Some of those hits were never followed up. We think a couple of areas might be fairly close to being able to publish resources with some limited drilling. And then there's some brand new targets that were developed in concert with Goldspot, who helped us review the substantive data set that was made available to us as we acquired these properties, and have, using their artificial intelligence techniques, have given us some new insights into where we might find additional resources. So this year's drill campaign, you know, I think last year we were probably running 80% resource development and maybe 20% sort of new discovery-focused drilling, and we'll probably be, you know, much more new discovery-focused this year, but still being able to expand some of the resources after the well-known deposits, because we know that the sulfide is still open in a lot of places, and there's a lot of places we can add sulfide, or especially if it becomes clear during the PEA process the importance of the sulfide, we may, you know, still continue to expand on that. But they will be, as we develop our plans, there'll be a blend with a heavier focus on what I consider sort of pure discovery type killing.
Well, that's going to be exciting to follow along with. And as those news results come back in from drill assays, we'll keep following along, Tim. One other thing that I think would be important to mention is when people think of the Yukon, they kind of think of it as remote and they think of it as a fly-in location. Sometimes that turns some investors off, but where you're situated in the Yukon, if you wouldn't mind just sharing, you know, the infrastructure that's around you, you know, the access you have to the project, I think that's a key distinguishing point considering you've got the wealth of minerals in the Yukon, but you also have the access of a modern day site.
Well, absolutely. We're located in central Yukon. Our project is within 12 kilometers of hydroelectric grid power, so it's on the Yukon grid. We're within 30 kilometers of paved highway, but to access that paved highway is on an all-season road maintained by the Yukon government that is part of the Resource Gateway project that is being financed by the federal and territorial governments to further increase access into some of the significant projects in central Yukon, like Casino and that. So the road that goes, that leads right to our project. If you keep going down that road, you get to the Casino project owned by Western Copper, where Rio Tinto made a $26 million investment last year. So the takeaway from all of that is that other parties are building out the infrastructure that directly affects us in a very positive way. So when you have third parties paying for the roads, the hydro that goes right by or sometimes over your project, that is a very positive for the project.
It's a nice thing when somebody else is helping build the roads, Tim. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
And I just think it was worth highlighting just because you guys have that road access and access to power and access to staff. And so it's in a good position in that sense. Well, one other thing would just be from a financial standpoint, how much will the budget be for this year's program for the drilling and to produce the economic assessment? And what kind of cash does the company have in the treasury?
So the company currently has the cash needed to complete the preliminary economic assessment and to do a modest exploration program on the property. We will be looking to, in the coming months, look to do a small financing to ensure that we are able to continue to advance the project from a drilling perspective. And then, so currently we have just under $2 million cash in hand. And like I said, that completes the PEA, does a modest program. But we will be looking to expand on that. Ideally, this year, we're spending somewhere between $3 and $5 million on the property, including that PEA and drilling.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that update, Tim. And then I guess just from a big picture takeaway, how do you want investors to think about Granite Creek Copper, you know, as far as how it's positioned in the marketplace with other copper stocks? Because there's a lot of interest in the copper market. There's a lot of copper stocks that people can sift through, and sometimes it's hard for people to know, well, who are you and what is your main angle in the copper space? So if you wouldn't mind just sharing from a high level, how do you want to be seen by the marketplace?
Well, you know, and you probably know this, if you ask any CEO in the junior mining sector, they're going to tell you that their stock is undervalued. I've never heard of anybody say that their stock was overvalued. But I like to be able to back that up. We feel we are undervalued. And the reason is, when you look at our peers, and you look where typically a junior base metal explorer trades, typically you trade between 1 to 2% of your contained metal at the PEA stage. So we are a PEA stage company. We're updating that PEA. And on that metric alone, we should be about 50% higher than our current trading price at the 1%. So even if we got to 2%, we see a huge potential revaluation for the company based on the resource that we just published and based on the fact that we're taking that resource to PEA, we expect strong economics to come from that. So I don't know if that answers your question totally, but I encourage people as a metric, if you're trying to figure out the valuation, look at what that company's contained metal is, look at spot price, and see if they fall within that 1% to 2% at the PEA stage. Of course, once you move off that towards feasibility, you would expect that to go up. But that's a good way to value companies when you're comparing one to the other. How close are they to there?
Well, that's a great way to summarize it, Tim. And I do think you guys have room to get re-rated for sure, just based on what you've already put out on this resource. And everybody should be looking forward to that economic study as a key news event. But there's always a lot of news with any company. So is there any other key news that you want investors to be on the lookout for, let's say over the next 3 to 6 months, but really the balance of the year. Is there any other key news that you're going to be putting out that you want people to keep an eye on?
Well, of course, once we finalized our 2022 exploration plans, we will be discussing that at length with the market so that people understand what we're trying to do and what our goals are. You know, once we've locked down the timing on the PEA and confirmed the firm that's going to be completing that for us, we'll be discussing that to the market. I mean, those are the big key ones. And launch of our exploration program, we started joining in May last year. We're hopeful to get on the ground sometime in the same time frame. It's a little bit weather dependent, but we should be sometime in May or April. Being discussing with the market, the launch of the program, and some of our key goals.
Sounds great. Well, we'll keep an eye out for those updates and have you back on, Tim, once you have a better plan of exactly where the targets will be and what the actual drill program will be. Until then, definitely check out Granite Creek Copper GCX on the TSXV and GCXXF on the OTCQB. Tim, we appreciate you coming on and sharing some time with us to unpack the project, and looking forward to our next discussion.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.